Welcome to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. You may have been following NPR's series, Family Matters, The Money Squeeze. It's been heard on Tuesday's Morning Edition through, it'll continue through next week. Record numbers of adult children, middle-aged parents, and elderly grandparents are living under the same roof, doing their best to deal with the emotional and financial stresses. This is occasioned by people living longer and, of course, the down economy. Many others are dealing with similar issues while not living together. Some economists are calling those middle-aged parents the sandwich generation. And later in the program, we'll be looking for your experiences. Do you find yourself in that sandwich generation or part of that younger or older generation? What are the stresses, emotional or financial, that are affecting you? And how are you dealing with those? What advice could you give to others dealing with those? Later in the program, we'll be talking with a Utah member of that sandwich generation, Highland mother of four, Janice Hayes. We'll also be talking with USU Associate Professor of Consumer Sciences, Lucy Delgadillo. And as I mentioned, we'd love to have your story as well. So that opportunity will be coming in the second half of the program. You can email us right now, and we'll get that on in the second half, upraccess@gmail.com, upraccess@gmail.com. We'll have the phone lines open in the second half as well. Right now, conversation that I had yesterday with NPR's David Green, who's been hosting those Family Matters segments. Here's that conversation with David Green. On this part of the program, NPR's David Green joins us. He has been involved with NPR's Family Matters series. You've been hearing that on Morning Edition Tuesdays that runs through June 6th. David Green, thanks for joining us.
Tom, it's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Where did this series start? Was this your idea?
It was not. I don't know if any one individual person at NPR came up with it, but we just felt this was a moment to cover this subject. We had been, you know, reading some stories, showing that the demographic data was showing a change in our country for a variety of reasons. I mean, people are living longer because of the economy. Younger people, you know, in their 20s, maybe after college, or, you know, even in their late teens, are deciding to stay home longer instead of going out into the workforce. And so you just had this increase in the number of multi-generational households, places where there's at least, you know, two or even three adult generations living under the same roof. And it presents all sorts of new questions. It creates, you know, loving environments, we've learned, it can create a lot of difficult choices and tensions. So we decided to find three families and just almost live with them for a period of 8 weeks and bring their stories to the air. And also what we hope to do is start a real conversation with our listeners, you know, both people around the country who are going through some of these experiences themselves and people who might not be, but, you know, might just be really interested in hearing stories like this.
So not only demographics, but the economy, I'm sure, has to do with this. Is there a cultural shift here as well?
You know, I don't think we know yet. And that's one of the questions we're going to ask in the final week of the series as we wrap up next week. Where do we go from here? Certainly the economy is playing a role, especially when it comes to the younger generation. And we had an academic researcher from the Pew Research Center on the beginning of the series, and he said this is appearing to be almost a new anti-poverty program that's growing in many ways, not relying on the government, but relying on family when you can't afford to be on your own. So how much of that is just temporary because of the tough economy, I think we'll only find out, you know, if and when the economy comes back. But there's certainly cultures around the world where, you know, nursing homes are not even considered an option, where, you know, elderly people just live with their family when they can't be on their own, where younger people stay home longer, and whether the United States is kind of going back to that and it's going to be a sort of permanent shift in our culture or whether it's temporary, I just don't think we know yet. But if it is a lasting change, you know, it presents all sorts of new questions and issues about policy and the role of government, and there'll be all sorts of interesting questions associated with a shift like that.
Yeah, you addressed what I was wondering about. Other cultures, this is the way it's been done for many generations, and perhaps U.S. is moving in that direction. So some economists call this the sandwich generation. You're supporting not only your parents, but your children. That's got a, I don't know, there's financial stresses and emotional stresses as well.
And we really have felt that. I mean, I'm thinking of our family who we've been profiling. They live just south of Baltimore, and there's a woman named Geneva Hunter who, you know, is working full-time. She's taking care of her mother who has, you know, pretty serious dementia, and there were some, you know, a lot of tearful moments that we had with Geneva. But as we just lived with that family for a while, it was just so fascinating the different things that came up and the different emotions. I mean, she loves being with her mother, you know, day in and day out and spending time with her. It's really special to have that time with her aging mom in these last years. And she, you know, she says she would never consider a nursing home. But the question was, who was going to take care of her? And so Geneva's daughter, the elderly woman's grandmother, granddaughter, decided to quit her job for 2 years. It was supposed to be just 1 year. It's turned out to be 2 years. Quit her job altogether to be a full-time caregiver for her grandma. Now, you think about that. I mean, that's deferring saving for retirement. That means, you know, she's making less money. That means that she's sort of derailed her career for a couple years, and that raises a whole bunch of questions. And then, you know, this family was confronting another decision, and that was, you know, the elderly member of the family, Ida Christian, she owned a home with her son down in Richmond, Virginia. And they faced the question, do we sell the house? You know, even though some members of the family will have to move and live somewhere else, it'll free up some money to help with her care. And, you know, there's a debate over when is the right time to sell a house. But just the fact that people are living under the same roof, caring for each other, the number of questions and emotions that it kind of brings up, it's extraordinary.
And what really hit me was one of the younger people. I can't remember her name. She's just talking about kind of a taken-for-granted fact now that she's probably going to be caring for her parents when they get older.
Yeah, we heard that voice. Lauren, who's only 12 years old, she was on a softball field in our piece this week, and she's had to grow. She's had to, as her mother put it, grow up quickly because she's pitched in and helped to take care of her great grandmother. You know, changing her and you know helping with her care, and you know she said she's just assuming that she's going to be doing this for her parents down the road. And really, we had some really interesting research from one of our science correspondents that went along with that, talking about that if you have those conversations about finances and, you know, about these hard decisions with your kids early on, it makes such a difference in terms of, you know, how much money these kids will save when they get older. And you know, I presume they'll have an easier time making these tough decisions in the future.
These are very emotionally wrenching decisions, right? You one of the pieces had to do with put your parent in an institution or take care of him or her yourself. But if you decide to take care of him or her yourself, that's you better be prepared.
Yeah, no, it's been very emotional, and you know, it's even though I try to be the reporter. I mean, I'm a human being, and it's so hard not to just feel the tingles and, you know, want to tear up at a lot of points, but yeah, I mean, it's decisions whether to send your father to an adult daycare center during the day, you know, I mean, just heart-wrenching. And, you know, whether or not you kick your 24-year-old son out of the house and say, hey, man, go out and get a job, it's time, you know, and instead of, you know, letting him have that place, you know, to keep getting on his feet. I mean, it's tough stuff. It's tough stuff, and it's emotional stuff.
Mm. Sounds like there are advantages. There are some good things that happen, including the young people learning some things at an earlier age.
There's no doubt about it. And that actually, Tom, is one of the things that's really surprised me. You know, as hard as things have gotten, all three of our families have talked about how appreciative they are for the opportunity to live with their loved ones and to be close and to work as a unit. You know, very few regrets that we've heard. I mean, these families have said, you know, we didn't expect to be living this way, and it's hard. It's really hard, but we don't regret it, and we wouldn't want it any other way. One of the one of the most memorable interviews for me, we brought a 24-year-old Nicholas in. He's from our family just outside Washington, D.C., and he's 24 and trying to find himself. He had just been getting his first real stable full-time job at a roofing company as we were talking. And he talked about just loving being in the house with his grandfather and how helping to care for his grandfather was just really helping him to mature. And he had a tough upbringing growing up in a tough neighborhood and, you know, had problems with drugs. And, you know, just to be able to reflect on how he was becoming more of a man and less of a boy by taking care of his grandfather who suffers from Alzheimer's was really, really moving.
It's another memorable spot for me. A young man, 14-year-old, I think, he's brother of the young lady that we've been referencing on the softball field. And it's just the time crunch and the opportunity crunch. Who's going to stay home and take care of grandmother?
When I was 14, you know, I was growing up with a single mom, but I certainly at 14 didn't have an elderly grandparent who I was learning to help dress and, you know, make food for. Home alone at age 14, taking care of an elderly grandparent. I mean, I was just stunned. But you got that. That's exactly it. It's the time crunch, and his sacrifice, his willingness to stay home with grandma instead of be out, you know, on the streets, you know, riding a bike or whatever he'd want to do on a great summer evening, meant that his sister could go out and play softball. That his parents could go watch his sister play softball. Just really, you really just feel that family working as a, you know, as a unit together.
If you just joined us, we're talking about Family Matters, The Money Squeeze. That's a series on NPR you've probably been hearing. I heard Tuesdays, it'll wrap up next week. Record numbers of adult children, middle-aged parents, and elderly grandparents are living under the same roof, doing their best to deal with emotional and financial stresses. This is caused, of course, by demographic shifts. We're living longer and the down economy. It might be a cultural shift. And we talk a bit about that. Many others, of course, are dealing with similar issues while not living under the same roof. Some economists are calling those middle-aged parents the sandwich generation. Coming up in about 10 minutes, we're going to be talking with a Utah member of that sandwich generation, Highland mother of four, Janice Hayes. We'll also be talking with USU Associate Professor of Consumer Sciences, Lucy Delgadillo. We'd love to have your stories. Are you living some of these problems? How are you dealing with these issues? Could you give us some advice through what you've gone through? The email is upraxis@gmail.com, upraxis@gmail.com, upraxis@gmail.com. We'll be opening up the phone lines about 10 minutes as well. We're talking about the Family Matters, The Money Squeeze. And we're talking with NPR's David Green, host of this series. You mentioned earlier this sandwich generation is a time, a prime time, when they should be putting the pedal to the metal for retirement, saving for retirement, and yet money in many cases has to go out for their parents and for their children. What's going to happen there?
That's one of the big questions. And the 43-year-old woman who left her job for 2 years to take care of her grandma and now is trying to get back. is trying to get back, you know, into a full-time job. I mean, in this economy, it's tough as it is to be coming back and trying to get your career back going again at this point after being away for 2 years. You know, it's scary for her. She says she doesn't regret it. She says she wanted to make that sacrifice and take 2 years off to take care of her grandmother every day. But, you know, it's not going to be easy for her.
Mm. And the younger generation, I suppose you have to now perhaps not only plan for retirement, plan for your job, but plan for how you're going to take care of your parents.
Yeah, and take care of yourself. I mean, long-term care insurance is becoming a bigger and bigger issue now. And we had some people on the air talking about the benefits you know, of buying into long-term care insurance and whether it's a smart decision and when it's a smart decision. And you know, that was one thing we were hoping to do, to bring some, you know, rich stories onto the air, to introduce these families to people, but also kind of follow along into the interesting policy debates and questions and financial decisions to try and help our listeners, you know, begin to grapple with some of these decisions.
Now, the role of government, is this, the people you've talked to, does that fall along the usual liberal-conservative, Republican-Democratic lines, or are there some curveballs thrown here?
You know, Tom, we've so far tried to stay out of politics, but we've been talking about bringing some of the political questions in our final week, and I'm not. We'll have to wait and see how the conversation goes. And in our last week, we're probably going to have one member from each family come in and, you know, just reflect on the last 8 weeks and sort of where they've gone. And that was one question that we hope to raise with them. You know, what is the role of government? Are there things that you feel like the government could be doing to make your life easier? Or do you want the government sort of out of your lives, and do you feel like you have control of the situation, and this is the way it should be? And that's one thing I'm really excited to ask people about.
You've been doing some focusing on financial literacy as well during this, right? Trying to get people some help. I wonder what's struck you, especially in terms of some advice that these people can receive.
Yeah, I mean, long-term care insurance as an option is certainly one issue that has come up. It's one of the other things that struck me. There's one family, our family in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Annabelle Bowers is the elderly woman. She's 87 years old. Her family calls her Snootsy. That's her nickname. Her grandchildren are taking care of her, and she has a trust. She has some money set aside on her own, and there are other family members out there who probably will, you know, have a part of her inheritance when she passes away. And the family wanted to be really, really careful. They didn't want to make it seem like they were taking advantage of the situation. They wanted to make sure that the money they were using from this trust was being spent for her care, for Snootsy's care. And it's really hard sometimes for a family to go to a lawyer or to prepare documents because, you know, you feel like, oh, it's my family. We can, you know, we love each other. We'll deal with that in the end. But that family talked about how important it was and how it gave them peace of mind. You know, if they're going to be using this money, they want to make sure that, you know, their documents set up, there's a lawyer involved saying, you know, this money's coming for her care. So in the future, you know, when she does pass away, that other family members can't complain. They won't cause tensions later on down the road. They're kind of taking care of the tensions head on at this point. So that was really interesting piece of advice that I feel like we brought in. And you know, Tom, it's a lot of little things too. I mean, we had that same family talking. You know, they have a generation getting ready to go to college, and they said that they got some tax advice that if they had only listed the elderly grandparent who they're taking care of as a dependent on their tax forms, that would have gotten their daughters so much more money, student aid, to go to college. And so that's a decision that they, you know, sort of felt that they regretted, you know, making one wrong check on the tax form. And now they realize that, you know, they can at least offer that advice to people now.
One thing that stood out to me was the complex real estate matters. I hadn't really thought about that. I guess I better go take a look at that in my own situation.
Yeah. No, we had a conversation with an expert on real estate because one family decided to free up money to, and it's the family I was just talking about, the 43-year-old woman who's going back to work. She is able to go back to work because the family sold a house and freed up money to pay for a caregiver. So you think, well, you know, that decision absolutely makes sense. But you know, the expert we brought on said there are pluses and minuses when you're selling real estate, and there's an argument for hanging on to it. And you know, you really want to make sure that you've exhausted all the other options before you dive into just selling a house, because it's not a decision that you want to make at a desperate moment. You really want to think things through and make sure it's the right decision.
Finally, do you come away from, you spend a lot of time with these people, and this is, of course, representative of what's happening in many families across America. Do you come away hopeful about families dealing with these problems successfully?
I do. I mean, the three families we have been talking to have dealt with, I mean, just so much hard moment, seeing a grandfather with Alzheimer's driving himself away in a car and getting lost and having to be found by police. You know, the medical ailments we've been talking about, the, you know, dementia, Alzheimer's. I mean, just some of the toughest diseases to watch. And yet these families, you know, they're so resilient. They talk about not regretting for a second, coming together as a unit. And so, I mean, that's what I have taken away from this. I mean, you know, there are a lot of policy questions, the role of government. I mean, those are all debates that are going to have to happen as they relate to this demographic shift that we've been seeing. But just on a personal level inside these families, just the resilience and the willingness to sacrifice and make it through and sort of have a cup half full feeling about everything and say, this is really hard, but we're doing it together, and that makes us happy. You know, watching that has just been really, really touching.
We've been talking with NPR's David Green. He's been bringing us a series on Morning Edition, Family Matters, The Money Squeeze, the last of these airs this coming Tuesday. And you're inviting listeners to share their stories, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We, you know, Morning Edition's Facebook page. We're on Twitter, at Morning Edition, or at NPR Green. You can comment on our webpage. We have the NPR Tumblr set up, and a lot of listeners have been sending in photos and really touching stories of their own. And our program Talk of the Nation, you know, we had a lot of callers calling in and just sharing their stories. So it's really, this is exactly what we were hoping for. It's been, you know, a real shared experience and a real conversation with an entire community about a lot of these issues.
The series is called Family Matters, and you can share your story just by going to NPR and those places that David was just talking about. You can hear the previous pieces in this series, and the last report is coming up on Tuesday during Morning Edition. David Green, thanks so much.
Tom, absolute pleasure. Thank you for your interest in this. I really appreciate it.
My conversation with David Green from yesterday, and you've been hearing him with his series Family Matters on NPR's Morning Edition on Tuesdays, and the last program in the series is coming up this coming Tuesday. You heard David Green solicit your comments for NPR. We're soliciting your comments for Access Utah. We'd love to hear what you think. Do you have an experience? Are you living this? Are you part of the sandwich generation or an adult child trying to help out? Are you one of the elderly people in the family who are being helped out? Any of you are welcome. We'd love to hear your story at upraxcess@gmail.com, upraxcess@gmail.com, or the number is 1-800-826-1495, 1-800-826-1495. Following a brief break and a Thad Box commentary, we're going to continue this discussion about this multi-generational money squeeze and emotional squeeze with Lucy Delgadillo, a USU Associate Professor of Consumer Sciences, and with Highland Mother of Four, Janice Hayes. That's coming up.
Commentator Thad Box.
The Utah legislature, supported by the governor and endorsed by Congressman Bishop, put together a passel of bills and resolutions demanding that we the people hand over our land, our public land, to the state of Utah. They allocated $3 million for legal action forcing us to return what Utah never owned. Their own lawyers warned that there is little chance of winning, and getting the U.S. Congress to pass and the president to sign a law giving the people's land to Utah is unthinkable. Utah adopted its constitution in 1895. It addressed the state's relationship to the Union and the federal lands. It says, "The state of Utah is an inseparable part of the federal Union, and the Constitution of the United States is the supreme law of the land, and that the people inhabiting this state do affirm and declare that they forever disclaim all right and title to the unappropriated public lands lying within the boundaries hereof." Public lands have always been owned by the people of the United States. Such land can't be claimed by Utah or any state simply because it is within their boundaries. The people of Utah once urged the public domain to be put into protected federal status. That land belongs to all people of our nations. We Utahns are shareholders in the public land. We have use of the land nearest us. Water from it is essential to our existence. Federal land supports our industries and our recreation. And the federal government returns more money to Utah than Utahns pay in federal taxes. Surely Utah's elected leaders are not so ignorant of history, law, and the will of the people as to think they can take land belonging to this people. Apparently, voters who elected them and citizens who stayed home and did not vote do not mind their officials tilting at windmills. This is Thad Box.
You're listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. Record numbers of adult children, middle-aged parents, and elderly grandparents are living under the same roof. They're dealing with emotional and financial stresses, occasioned, of course, by the down economy and perhaps cultural shifts, also demographic shifts as we live longer. Many others, of course, are dealing with similar issues while not living together. Some economists are calling those in the middle the sandwich generation. And now we are looking for your experiences. We heard from some families in the Eastern United States with David Green and the NPR series Family Matters. We'd love to hear from you with your family experience. Are you dealing with some of these issues? And how are you dealing with those? What's your advice to others? The number is 1-800-826-1495, 1-800-826-1495, or you can email us at upraxcess@gmail.com, upraxcess@gmail.com. On the telephone, we have a member of that sandwich generation, Highland Mother 4, Janice Hayes. Janice Hayes, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And in studio, we have with us USU Associate Professor of Consumer Sciences, Lucy Delgadillo. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you for inviting me.
Janice Hayes, I understand four children, right, and three in college, is that right?
That's right. We've got three in college and a little 15-year-old still home with us.
And your parents, I don't know how old they are, but you know, I guess there are some worries there as they get on in years. I understand they live out in Delta.
Yeah, they do. My father is 77, my mother's 75, and then my husband has a mother who's still alive, and I think she's right between those two. She's 76.
Mm-hmm. So you're one of those, kind of right in the middle. You're worrying about the younger generation and the older generation.
That's right. Yep, we sure do.
What are some of your worries? What are some of the stresses that you worry about with regard to that?
Well, it's interesting because my father has Parkinson's disease and he struggles with that physically, and of course my mother, as the caregiver, struggles. And so in their situation, it's more that we need to be there to help them physically. Financially, they seem to be doing okay, but it's the physical being there and helping my mother and helping him. And that's been a struggle for us because it takes the time away from our family that we need to be down there helping. So that's the thing we've found is the time issue.
And
actually traveling and, you know, being there with them.
Mm-hmm. I was just going to mention with you, it's distance issues as well involved in that.
Yeah, it takes a couple hours to get down there, and we try to do it. We try to set up schedules where we can all be there, but sometimes it's kind of tricky. It's a tricky situation.
Then there must be financial stress. It's got to be with three kids in college.
Yeah, there certainly is. It seems like that never goes away. And, you know, they try to be as independent as they can, but you find when your kids are in college that still they work, they go to school, but sometimes they still need a little bit of, you know, mom and dad's help with certain things. And so you'd have to do that sometimes.
And as we mentioned with David Green, in the middle of all of this, you and your husband, I'm sure, you know, you're trying to put away as much as you can for retirement yourselves.
Yeah, that's a continuing process, and we do pretty well with that because we budget quite consciously. We can do without a lot of things, and that's never been a problem for us. But, you know, with the economy, like you were mentioning, it has been more difficult for us to do that, even doing without a lot of things. So that's a continuing struggle.
Let's turn to Lucy Delgadillo. The budgeting, that's got to be important, especially with this squeeze, as families are squeezed from both ends. What advice can you give us for families who maybe aren't as good at budgeting, it sounds like the Hayes family is?
I think when you have several generations going into under one roof, it's probably the best strategy to do at the very beginning is to communicate. So you have to have what are going to be your expectations for the other members of the family. You probably need to set rules in regard to boundaries. For example, issues regarding the housekeeping. If one of the youngest children is just graduated, didn't have a job, or is looking for a job, that's what you will expect this person to be doing. So if you, for example, don't have internet access and because of these children have moved into your house and now you have to be paying that extra money, so you will have to let them clear what your expectations are going to be and what are your contribution to the whole family wealth is going to be. I mean, unemployed persons, as I say, can be looking for a job or they can help with other chores. It will probably has to be issues on space, too. One of my specialty is housing issues. And when you have so many people, that could be a crowded situation. When we have crowded situations, there is more likely to have these feelings of anger. I don't have my own space. I want some privacy. So that is another issue that you have to consider. And also, if you is the older parents living there with no children, now you have one of the younger children moving with his wife and one of the grandchildren, then you have to consider issues of child-proof the house, again, removing your valuables so it won't be at the reach of the children. So there are several considerations also in regard to the space. But at the same time, I'm a more optimistic person saying maybe 3 generations living under one roof could be a good thing. Because and then the grandchildren will have the opportunities to have the expertise and wisdom of the grandparents, and also the grandparents and senior citizens can also have the companionship. That sometimes seniors become lonely, and so it could be a nice balance. But most of all, if it is the financial issues are at stake, you'll have to come in a conference, communicate what are going to be the expectations, what are going to be the roles, how we're going to deal and assign. I mean, if the older child doesn't have a job, you cannot expect that he's going to put money for rent, but you will expect to do other things. So communications to come up with clear expectation and to avoid damaging the relationship and also the finances.
I imagine those are always issues as you go forward. Mrs. Hayes, I wonder, have you dealt with any of those types of issues where you've had to have a meeting or communicate about what the boundaries are, financial or space-wise?
Oh, yeah, we've had to deal with that just recently with my parents and kind of decide, because I happen to be the eldest of my siblings, and so we're dealing with things like their will. We're trying to put those things together too, and that's come in. And now that we've gotten to the point where my dad is slowly, you know, going downhill, we've had to make discussions among the siblings about what's going to happen when he is just to the point where one of us is going to have to take them in and probably take care of them, because he's to the point where that my mother can't help him anymore. So we've had to talk about all those kinds of things, and I've sort of had to head that up as the eldest. And it's been interesting because you find out among your siblings too who's willing to do what and who's not so willing, and sometimes it's a little bit surprising. So that communication is really an important thing.
It's got to be, I'm guessing, that's a pretty emotionally loaded conversation.
Yeah, it really can be, and you realize, I guess, who you can count on, and it's really good to do that up front. As your guest was mentioning, because you need to find out who you can count on and where the boundaries are and who you can't particularly count on, who's maybe not in a position to help at the time. So it's good to get all that up front. We're finding out.
What about that younger generation? Are they helping out?
Yeah, I think particularly in my family, because my children are so close to their grandparents, it hasn't been a struggle that way because they seem to enjoy that, at least now. They'll go down and help on the farm. They'll do things to help grandpa and grandma. And so that hasn't been an issue, but it could be if it got to the point where it's taking more time and you know, different things like that, maybe requiring a real sacrifice.
Excuse me. The national demographics, their demographers are telling us that more and more of these multi-generational families living under one roof and more people dealing with these issues, maybe the generations closer and closer and needing each other. I don't know if you've seen that around your friends or family, that more of that happening?
Within my group, or are you talking to your guests?
No, within your group, yeah.
Yeah, I've seen that quite a bit. In fact, one of my friends is actually built on a little, I guess you would call it a mother-in-law apartment, so they could take care of her mother. I see that a lot, really, actually, with older children coming home with their children. For some reason, among my friends group, there's a lot of them coming back home to live with their wives and their young children. So I see that a lot in our neighborhood here.
Mm-hmm. And I imagine that causes some stresses that have to be dealt with.
Yeah, I think it does. Yeah. It's a difficult situation sometimes. And again, I think it's the communication that helps up front.
On this part of Access Utah, we're talking about Family Matters, the NPR series, the money squeeze, multi-generations, either under one roof or sort of having to come together in a closer way than ever before and work through a lot of these issues, financial and emotional. And we're talking with Highland Mother of Four, Janice Hayes. In studio with us is Associate Professor of Consumer Sciences, Lucy Delgadillo. And we welcome your phone call and email. 1-800-826-1495 is the phone number, 1-800-826-1495. We'd welcome your story, or upraxis@gmail.com, upraxis@gmail.com. We have about 7 minutes left in this segment. Then we're going to talk about budgeting with BYU Assistant Professor of Marketing Jeffrey Larson. He's been involved in a study which says when you're shopping for at least one item, or only one item, budgeting is a bad idea. It's counterintuitive. We're going to talk with him at the end of the program. The number again, 1-800-826-1495, or the email, upraxis@gmail.com. Professor Delgadillo, one thing that I was curious about, talked about this with David Green, maybe this is a cultural shift in the United States. Many other cultures already seem to do this and have for a long time and seem to have dealt with these issues.
Yes, but what I have seen in other cultures, I mean, coming from a different culture and also when I visit South Korea, is that the elderly is in a completely different position. It's almost like it is in a privileged position. There is more respect toward them, and they also are more active. And so if it is a cultural shift, I don't know, I can tell. It will be too early to say, but it will definitely can bring benefit, as I say, in seeing that. There is no, I mean, like, I'm from Costa Rica. We don't have the practice of putting all elderly parents in the nursing home. It is a burden, yes, to the children to take care for older parents. But it's almost like an expected. It's a social expectation. Your parents take care of you when you were a child, when you were dependent, and now it is the time to almost pay back or return the favor. So if they need your help, you are there to support them, to provide what they need. Hmm. It's not necessarily seen as a burden. As I say, you have the family gathering together in the patio, I mean, barbecue, etc., and it's always nice to have those grandparents in there. But it's a completely different social expectation in other cultures in a common practice. Hmm.
So in Costa Rica, for example, it just wouldn't even occur to people to put grandma in the nursing home.
Oh, no, and for several reasons, too. One is that it's extremely... There are nursing homes, but they are extremely expensive. But the other one is almost like mothers, I mean, grandparents has this contribution to the family. For example, if I work, and then they will probably provide some services like babysitting. So it's an exchange. I'll bring the money for the house, the utilities, and then she provides childcare for me. But in United States, it's a different setting. Families usually don't live so close. There are more job opportunities. You have to move. In fact, families move on an average of every seven years. So you might lose the link with your extended families. Oh, and that's another thing, Tom, that our definition of, we don't really have a definition of a nuclear family. When we say family, we are also including the extended family. Mm-hmm. So you say, who is your family? I never think just my husband and children. I think also my mother, my sister, relative, etc.
And so that would tie into any decisions you make about that family.
Yes, and it could bring, that's why communication is so important, because there are more people involved, there are more different ways of thinking and different perspectives. Somehow you have to reconcile those, and communication has to be one major issue in the family to avoid disappointment and damaging relationships.
Hmm. Janice Hayes, it sounds like your family has sort of approached this on that level, the whole family together.
Yeah, we have. I have 8 siblings, actually, so we have had to do that up front because it's involving so many people and so many family members. Hmm. And so that's been a big big issue with us.
It sounds like with that many family members, probably never even an option considered to put your father in a care facility. But I can imagine you could imagine that that would be a very wrenching decision.
Yeah, it would be. And, you know, right now it's easy to say absolutely not, but you just never know what level of care he's going to need and if we can provide that. So it's a difficult thing. I mean, right now I say no, I would never do that, but mm-hmm. I think we just have to wait and see. But right now, no, absolutely not. We'll try to find a way to make it work between the nine of us children.
Do you have conversations, or does it ever come up about when you and your husband get elderly, and what your children's expectations are in terms of?
Oh, that's a great question, because I haven't even thought of that, but I would hope that I have raised my children so that they would have some, you know, they looked at it practically, but then they would also have some compassion that would dictate what they did. But that's a great conversation to have. I'll have to do that pretty quick, I think, and see where they sit with all this.
Professor Delgadillo, I'm sure you would suggest people have that conversation.
Yes, definitely. There are some lending product out there. For example, reverse mortgages, where you can tap on the equity in your home when you are cash poor, in-house rich. And this kind of lending product in particular requires some counseling, and is strongly advised that the elderly person, or because you have to be at least 62 to get one of reverse mortgages, that whoever is getting the reverse mortgages bring along their children. So the financial decisions are not made in isolation, and they are not a surprise for the others, for their children later on. So it's basically a matter of being proactive. And if you do like everything in life, you are proactive, you prepare, you plan ahead, probably things are going more the way that you want them to be rather than having these negative outcomes.
Mm-hmm. What other things would you suggest families include in their planning? We've talked about, of course, you know, retirement, budgeting right now, so make sure the money flow is good.
Yes. Well, definitely, if you're going to have several, if this is a sudden situation where you're going to have an intergenerational household, definitely you will have to come up with a budget that will include everyone's income, but also everyone's expenses. And coming up with the budget is the easy part. The hard part is really sticking to the budget. But there are some tips that you can use. There is professional advice you can use. So to accomplish that, but communication for sure, know your goals. And then when we set goals, you have to define, are they short-term goals or long-term goals? And like she said, she hasn't had the opportunity to talk to her husband so far, but, and then there's going to be a moment in which they will have to make decision. Okay, how we're going to do it. If, for example, I'm in my middle ages and I'm going to have to take care either of my youngest children or my elderly parents, and then I went on my budget, I have put the $50, $100 for my retirement. So I will have to consider, can I cut on some other flexible expending that I have so I be able to still afford my $100 to retirement, but also be able to help this child or this elderly parents. So you have to see what are your fixed items in your budget and what are your flexible when you have more flexibility. For example, you have to really think introspectively and say, what do I like? What are my weaknesses? If my weakness is the latte every morning and I pay for $1.50, so can I cut that? Can I make that a treat rather than a daily thing? Or if I like to go to the movies, can I rent a DVD that is just $1 or $3, whatever it is, but it's not compared to the ticket price on the movie? So you can start making these little changes in your budget. And then at the end of the month, that money should go to saving. Some behavioral economists call that compulsive saving. So instead of being compulsive spending, you basically are compulsive to save. So instead of buying the jeans that were $45, you buy one that is $28. That difference goes into saving. And that's how you make adjustment on your budget.
Very good. We just have a couple minutes left in this segment. I want to get some final advice from Janice Hayes. Other people who maybe are in this sandwich situation, what would your advice be to them?
Well, I would say again, the communication is so important. I would also suggest please start to budget and to save, because there's been times in our life just in the last 5 to 10 years where if we hadn't had a substantial amount of money put away, we would have probably lost our home and everything else and not been able to even think about supporting my parents or doing anything good like that. So just plan ahead. It's always important to plan ahead and to communicate with the people you love. And because if you do prepare, it will lessen the fear so much. You will feel so much more confident going into the future. And that is really what I would suggest to people.
Very good. Coming up, following a brief break, we're going to talk about at least one instance where a budget may not be a good idea. Hasten to say that maybe the only instance. A very interesting study from BYU Assistant Professor of Marketing, Jeffrey Larson. In the meantime, Jess Hayes, thanks so much. Appreciate you coming on.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate you having me.
And USU Associate Professor of Consumer Sciences, Lucy Delgadillo. Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
More coming up following a break.
Hi, this is Blair Larson, host of Fresh Folk. On the show this week, I feature the harmonious music of Bev Barnett and Greg Newlin, and the new image-based lyrical songs of Heather Steika. I'll also play songs from new albums by Bill Andrews, Rebecca Zapin, and Billy Mitchell, to name a few. Tune in and listen this Saturday at 8 p.m. to Fresh Folk on Utah Public Radio.
Coming up on the next Bluegrass Breakdown, she was born in Virginia, raised in New Jersey, taught high school English in New York, moved to Nashville, where she and her band, the Bootleggers, won the best band contests at the Telluride Bluegrass and Clifftop Old Time Festivals. She's now the irrepressible lead singer for the group Barefoot. I'm Dave Higgs, and Nora Jane Struthers will be our special live guest on the next Bluegrass Breakdown.
Saturday night at 10 on Utah Public Radio.
You're listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. We conclude the program with an interesting study out recently. The lead authors are Jeffrey Larson, Assistant Professor of Marketing at Brigham Young University, and his colleague Ryan Hamilton, Assistant Professor of Marketing at Emory University in Atlanta. The findings of the study seem to say there's at least one occasion where budgeting might be a bad idea. And Professor Larson, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
So, as I understand this, if you're in the market for one item, say a television, setting a budget can perhaps lead to you paying more. How does that happen?
Yeah, the way it works is if you go out shopping with a budget in mind, let's say you say, I'm going to buy a new LCD TV or something, and I say I've budgeted $500 for this TV, what happens is it actually changes your decision process in such a way that it pushes you to spend more on the TV than you might have otherwise for the budget, so without a budget. So, for example, you instead of, let's say if you go shopping without a budget, you might look at TVs ranging from $200 to $800, and you look at all these TVs and you kind of trade off all the different prices and the quality and the features that they give you. And in the end, you might settle on a $350 TV just because you think anything above that might be features that you don't really need or an extra screen size that isn't really necessary. But if you budget $500 and you say, well, I can afford $500, what you're going to do is instead you can look at TVs from between the ranges of $400 and $500. And that does two things. First of all is, since you've limited your range to that small range of TVs, you forget about price after that. You've determined that all these TVs are within your price range, so you're going to look at just the features and the size of the TVs and all these quality aspects instead of price, which is going to force you to spend more money. And a second thing that happens is it exaggerates your perception of how big those differences are to you. So you see this $450 TV and the $500 TV, and the $500 TV, the difference between those TVs might be that the $500 TV has some kind of meaningless feature that you think is going to be really neat. Well, that feature seems really neat in the store because that's all you're looking at is that tiny little range of TVs, and that looks like a really big difference when in reality it's probably not worth that extra $50.
But this phenomenon doesn't seem to apply if you're shopping for several different things at once.
Right, that's right. So aggregate budgets, for example, you say I budget $200 a month for my groceries. that's not going to affect your decision, just because the way this effect works is it's your budget itself is changing the way you make a decision about an individual product. Whereas if you set a $200 grocery budget, you're going to the store and you're shopping for cheese and bread and milk and et cetera. That's not going to affect how you make any of those individual decisions.
So if you're just going out to buy a TV or one item, it's not a good idea to set a money budget. What should I do?
Yeah. So we do not want the takeaway to be don't set a budget, because obviously people who need to set a budget are the kinds who are already probably needing the budget in the first place. So that's not the takeaway, and that's kind of been one of the jokes is my colleagues come around saying, hey, my wife tells me I shouldn't budget anymore, and that's not the takeaway. The takeaway, we do have a few suggestions for how to get around it, and it's for major purchases, you're getting a new couch, a new TV, even when you're buying a house, you're going to set a budget to determine how much you can afford to spend. So a few things is, number one, as we found, is if we force people to reconsider price. Remember, one of the ways this works is if you set a budget, you're going to look at a limited range of products. You've already determined that those are all affordable, and so you ignore price when you're making the final decision. First thing is, well, force yourself to re-examine price and re-question, wait, is it really worth that extra $100 for that other feature for this product? That's the first suggestion. The second suggestion is, potentially flip it on its head. Instead of going out, maybe you've determined that you can afford to spend $500 on a new couch, but as you look for a couch, instead of keeping that $500 price in mind, flip the effect on its head and instead say, well, what do I really want? Does it have to be a leather couch? Does it have to be a full-size couch? Does it have to be plush, et cetera? And instead, if you look at the feature set you need, what you'll end up doing is looking for the cheapest product that fits that feature set. So you say, hey, you know what, I want a 50-inch TV. And then in that case, your process will change. You'll say, you look at all the 50-inch TVs, and you'll look for the cheapest one, and so you'll end up spending less money.
Well, it's a very interesting study, and we've been talking with Assistant Professor of Marketing at Brigham Young University, Jeffrey Larson, along with his colleague, Ryan Hamilton, Assistant Professor of Marketing at Emory University, out with this interesting study published recently. Thanks so much.
My pleasure.
Appreciate you talking with us in brief. And thanks for listening to Access Utah.
Access Utah is a production of Utah Public Radio. You can listen to this episode or previous episodes of Access Utah anytime at upr.org, where you can find a link to subscribe to our podcast. This is Utah Public Radio, KUSR HD1 89.5 Logan, KUSK HD1 88.5 Vernal, KUSL HD1 89.3 Richfield, KUST HD1 88.7 Moab, and KUSU FM HD1 91.5 Logan.